I think it was like the best thing that happened to me to get a new start coming to New York and be fresh with Al Arbor, and then everything took off from there.
A storied franchise.
And the New York Islanders have won their fourth straight Stanley Cup.
All-time NHL greats.
And he caught that over the line. Goes to the left side, shoots and scores! He is all alone as the leading NHL goal-scoring defenseman.
Tonelli, the Nystrom, he scores! Bob Nystrom scores the goal! The Islanders win the Stanley Cup!
This is Talkin' Isles with Greg Bicker and Corey Wright.
We welcome you into another edition of Talkin' Isles, the New York Islanders official interview-based podcast. Greg Bicker here, the Islanders radio color commentator, alongside senior writer for NewYorkIslanders.com, Corey Wright. This week on Talkin' Isles, we bring in a member of the fabled 93 team in Benoit Hogue.
Benoit Hogue, of course, known best for being a part of that 1993 team, but a pretty interesting guy even aside from that. Played in the Spengler Cup, which is a great find from Greg. Had a couple of really good years here, but also won a Stanley Cup with the Dallas Stars, played for the Tampa Bay Lightning, the Arizona Coyotes, won a Calder Cup in Rochester before playing in Buffalo. And really the last, 10 or so years, he has been coaching youth hockey on Long Island. So a guy that wound up returning to the island after his playing days. So a lot of really fun things to catch up with Benoit Hogue. And of course, we did a deep dive into that 1993 team, because how can you not when you've got a guy like that on the pod with you?
863 career NHL games, 258 with those with the New York Islanders, more than any other team he spent time with in the regular season. Also, Dallas Stars, Buffalo Sabres, Toronto Maple Leafs, Tampa Bay Lightning, Phoenix Coyotes, as they were known when he wore the Kachina jersey back in 1999-2000, also a little bit of time with the Boston Bruins and Washington Capitals. So he certainly made his way around the NHL, but left a mark on all the teams that he spent time playing for, especially the New York Islanders. And it's time to take it away with Benny.
Duchesne gives it away in front to Hogue. He shoots and scores. Flatley sets up Benoit Hogue. A power play goal with a minute 21 to go in the third. And the Islanders lead the Blues 4-2.
We now welcome in Benoit Hogue to Talkin' Isles. And Benoit, you're a native of Quebec. So like most players that come from Quebec, you spent some time in the QMJHL. And looking at your stats, we know that's typically a pretty offensive league when you compare it to the Ontario Hockey League, the Western Hockey League. Your rookie season, only 25 points. Thankfully, that wasn't your draft year. Your next year, you exploded, 90 points in 63 games. And then you were, I'm sure, on everybody's radar. You end up going early in the second round to the Buffalo Sabres. Can you take us back to your junior days and really what you learned in your development?
Well, if I go back to my junior years, the year before that, I played major AAA. So I got hurt. I only played 40 games on the season with 40 points. People don't know, I was a 15-round pick out of junior being drafted. So going to camp, I didn't have expectation on maybe I'm making the team. So I ended up making the team, being a 15-round pick. Didn't play much. I had a coach, I think at the time was from France, that came and coached our team. And I wasn't getting power play time. I was just playing on fourth line because I wasn't a second-round pick. So the year after we changed, we had Ron Harris that came, former NHL that played for Detroit. Ron Harris was our coach, and he just put me out there, and then that's when everything happened. I was on the power play. Kellen Pally was one of the top guys, and they just showed the points going up. And the last 2 years was like that. And then I was a late bird year. I was October 28th, so I didn't go in the 84 draft. I had to wait for the next year after, and I was fortunate to go in the second round with Buffalo. So that was a crazy start, but that's all that happened. That's all the stats kind of changed quick.
Now, one of your junior years in 83-84, you would have seen Mario Lemieux in his last year before going into the NHL. Memories going up against him, and I think he had something over 200 points that season, 282 points in 70 games, his final year in the QMJHL. I mean, what a talent he must have been to go up against at the junior level.
Well, Mario was, I think, one game against us. I think he had 11 points in one game. And I'm trying to think if I had the task to kind of watch him a little bit, but Mario was just an unbelievable player. He had the size, he was tall, Back then, a little more skinny, but he had, you know, as everybody know, the skills, one-on-one skills, scoring goals, making plays. Mario was the attraction. I think everywhere that Laval was going to play, if they were their own game on the road, the buildings were full. But Mario, yeah, Mario was the guy in junior that, you know, the crowd follow, and it was always tough to play against him. And then that's why he ranked so many points. So great players to watch. Was fortunate to play against him in junior and the NHL. And the rest, you know, everybody knows about Mario. So it's a great career that he had. So but I was fortunate to be able to compete against him.
Well, Benny, I'm looking at your kind of early hockey journey. Obviously, you're from a suburb of Montreal. You played in Buffalo, Rochester, Long Island, Toronto. It feels like you didn't really leave the Northeast for a little while. But when you look at Rochester, you go there and that team winds up winning a Calder Cup. So, you know, what was that experience like spending that time in Rochester and then, of course, winning an AHL title?
Well, it was great. I got there, you know, being a French Canadian, like I went back to junior my first year, but they sent me to Rochester in my first year. Kind of, I have to learn the language a little bit, speak English. I had guys to help me out. It was a good team. Guys that, you know, we had Don Lever on that team that already had a career in the NHL and some of the guys that had experience too. So, and we had some of the prospect from Buffalo. We had Darren Poop on the net. We had a few other guys. Ray Shepard was one of them. We got there and then we had a good team. I think it was a solid team. That like a lot of kind of a chemistry together. And then as the season went on, realized that we're a good team and winning the Calder Cup my first year pro, I think it was great excitement. So was pretty fortunate on that.
We'll talk about your Rochester days. Darren Poop is a name I have not heard in a long time. I always associate him with the Tampa Bay Lightning and, of course, having a spot on the NHL's all-name team. But what were those, you know, early years in Buffalo like for you? Obviously, before you wound up getting traded to the Islanders, just, you know, you break into the NHL. What was it like playing in Western New York?
It was good. Buffalo, you know, Buffalo was a town that drafted me and I wanted to make the team. And then the first year I made the team, there was some trades. They were rebuilding the team a little bit. I was a natural center. At one point I was there playing on my first year on the line with Kevin McGuire and then Mike Hartman. We played together. And the year after, Turgeon was drafted. First of all, there was another center coming in. We made a trade for Dale Hawerchuk. There's another center coming in. So I was kind of transferred to the left side. I think we had great season at one time, but you know, teams that, you know, making trades sometimes and then trying to get a player. And Pat LaFontaine was the one that Buffalo was trying to get. Turgeon was involved in the deal. And then from what I heard, like they weren't really big key on me in Buffalo. So they kind of throw me in the deal. I think it was like the best thing that happened to me to get a new start coming to New York and be fresh with Al Arbor. And then everything took off from there.
I mean, talk about a blockbuster trade. October 25th, 1991, from Buffalo, go yourself, along with Pierre Turgeon, also Uwe Krupp, Dave McElwain involved in the deal, going back the other way. From the Islanders to Buffalo, Pat LaFontaine, Randy Hillier, and Randy Wood. I mean, you don't see too many deals like that. Yeah, there have been some big names traded in the NHL, but to have that many players involved, some big names involved, what was it like being part of that deal? And also going to a new team, but you also had a few familiar faces at least to go with, including Pierre Turgeon.
Well, sometimes I always like, you think it makes it easier when you're traded with a teammate. At least you're going there with a teammate and then you stick together and you go there. But yeah, that was that morning skate in Buffalo when we kind of heard something was going on and we were called in the office to let me know that there was a trade made and you're part of it. And I know Pierre was already told that he was in the trade. And after, like, we had, you know, Dave McElwain and Uwe Krupp was in that deal too. So I'm like, okay, like now there's like four guys coming, you know, we all stick together. We're going to the new team. For us, you know, the Islanders was the dynasty of the 80s, knowing that we're coming in to a team that's trying to rebuild. But I, like I told Turgeon, I say, listen, we're going to go there, make the best out of it. And we did. I think we went to Buffalo. I think it repumped the team a little bit there. Buffalo got their players that they wanted. And we came here and then had solid years. And, you know, we had good years in the early 90s. So, you know, I think it worked out for everybody. Sometimes you have to give a good player to get a good player. And that's what happened with Patty and Turge. So they were two top players involved in a trade. And I was a thrown in there. So I was fine with that.
You had some good years in Buffalo, a couple 40-point seasons, but things really did take off for you pretty much right when you arrived on Long Island, the first of three straight 30 goal seasons. You know, you're over a point per game the rest of the way that year. So what was it about, you know, was it just a fresh start, kind of like you said, or, you know, what do you think really unlocked your game by the time you got to Long Island?
Well, I think the confidence from Al, I think for me as a player, I think Al knew like the type of player maybe that I was with my, you know, a few years in Buffalo, but he gave me a lot of responsibility, like on the penalty killing, on the power play. And it was just up to me to go out there and trying to do well and help the team. And I think that's what happened. I started scoring like more goals and then be fitting more with the team. And it just went from there. I think it's, after my first year, it kept on going. I was like the type of guy that can play every situation. I can play center. I can play left wing. I can kill penalty, power play. So I think that's, I got to say, it's a little bit of confidence, but it's also the confidence from the coaches to put me out there and, you know, knowing I can help the team. So I think that's what happened here in New York.
We talk about arriving on Long Island with a guy like Pierre Turgeon. And, you know, I assume that when you guys get traded together, you spend a lot of time together, especially as you're getting to know a new area. So I think it's kind of known in Islander circles that Pierre Turgeon is like the world's biggest fan of Vincent's Clam Bar. So, you know, were you there when he would have found it? How many times have you eaten at Vincent's? And just what do you remember about those early days arriving on Long Island? Just your first impressions of a place that you would wind up spending, you know, so much of your life.
Well, I think we heard that from the guys too. And when we finally got a place here, most of the guys live in Huntington and we live in Glenhead. So I got a place there. Turge was one of my neighbor. And after we find out, trying to find a place to go for a pregame meal, I think Vincent's Clam Bar became the place. And a lot of guys were going there. After practice, we're all going to go there. Everybody was getting lunch and everybody's going home to take their nap for the game. So, yeah, I think Turge really loved that place. He was a big fan of that place. And then I think being superstitious, I think like every time the team was doing well and he was doing well after the practice, like, okay, then we meet at Vincent at 11:30 and it became the place for us. We get to know the staff there and the owner. And I think it was great. We start playing a little game with the credit cards on who's going to pay for the meal. And then it was good. It was a thing about a team to get together and you know, being there for one another on the ice. And then we did it like, you know, at lunchtime too on pregame. So, but it was good memories there, Vincent Clam Bars.
All Islanders fans know that 92-93 ended up being the best run that the Islanders had in the 90s. But even at the beginning of the season, you had quite a night, October 24th, 1992, almost exactly 1 year to the day after the trade was made. Game against the Hartford Whalers at the Coliseum. You pick up a hat trick.
The Hobie scores! And Hull just stole the puck and has a break coming right in on Burke. Hull for the trail. Yes! The hat trick.
What can you tell us about that night?
Well, that was really my first and only hat trick I had. So, you know, things happen in a game where you get the lucky break. But I always remember that. And, you know, like I said, you come to the NHL, many guys had a lot of chance to get hat tricks. And then to me, it was like always a two goal, never happened, but that game it happened. So, I remember when I stole that puck at the blue line and going in and I had the two goals and I came on Sean Burke there. I kind of made the move on my back end and decided to stop because I wanted to make sure it was going to go in. So a lot of people like kind of say like, oh my God, you know, you just stopped, you took your time. I'm like, yeah, because I want to make sure I can put it in. But that's what I remember the most of that game with the hat trick.
Well, there were a lot of personalities on that 93 team. Maybe one of the biggest was a rookie. You know where I'm going with this, in Darius Kasparaitis. So came over to North America, and I think he took over North America by storm. What can you tell us about him when he was just a rookie in the NHL on Long Island?
He did. Kasper was a great addition to our team. You know, he was coming in a very 5'10" stocky kind of guy, very solid, you know, hits very hard. And as we saw him going, like the hits that he was doing, the hip checks and stuff, we're like, oh my God, this kid is crazy. You know, he was taking guys' legs out. And then I'm like, you know, eventually somebody's going to come after him and then trying to tone him down. He was only 19 years old. But Kasper, that's the way he played. And you know what? We love to have him on our team. I end up later on playing against him, and I always had to watch when he was on the ice so he doesn't do the same to me. But I still chat with Kasper once in a while. He's a great guy. He was a great teammate. Loved to win, loved to compete. And I think, you know, the years that he was here, I think we were very fortunate to have him on our side. Great guy to have on our team.
At the team's alumni weekend last year, Casper Itis told us a pretty funny story about, you know, just kind of the culture shock of coming over from Eastern Europe. He said he didn't really have much of a concept of, you know, money and how much things cost over here. And he said that he think that he brought $5,000 with him for a road trip to Montreal, since he wound up spending most of it on a Versace jacket. granted, I'm asking you to remember a jacket from 30 years ago, but do you remember this jacket? Did you get a glimpse of, you know, Darius Kasparaitis walking around in a very, very expensive Versace jacket?
I'm not too sure the brand of it, but I remember that he was like bringing a lot of money because we were going to Montreal. He was going to shop, and I think he ended up buying that jacket. And then we were like laughing at him, kind of. I'm like, what the? He goes, oh, it's my new jacket. I don't remember the brand, but I think it was like some kind of black. It was really kind of flashy thing. And he spent like big money on that thing. We're like, you know, this is back in the early 90s. We're like, you're crazy. But that's what Casper is. You know, he was coming here. Like I said, he didn't really know like how things cost. We figured he had the money. I'm just going to buy it. And then that's what he was doing. He was doing that on different things. But I always remember that time too with that jacket. I wonder if he still have it. That would be something to see again what that jacket looked like. But I know it was kind of weird. It was a jacket that most of the guys, even the brand, weren't going to wear. But Casper just wear it and he was proud of it.
I was just going to say one more Darius Kasparaitis welcome to North America note and see if you can remember this, because he did tell us a story. Or maybe one of your teammates told us a story from back then, that he came over and he heard a song that he thought was the most amazing song in the world, and he couldn't wait to play it for everybody in the locker room. If you don't know, I will share it. Do you remember what that song may have been?
No, I'm not too sure. Like, so, I said, it's been a long time ago, but
it has been. But this had to be memorable. This 19-year-old coming over, it was "Can You Feel the Love Tonight" by Elton John.
Oh my God.
And was just so amazed. Of course, The Lion King, he had to share it with everybody. I think that just says so much about him coming over and the type of personality he had.
Well, yeah, I believe that type of song could be like something that Casper fell in love with and he was just going to play. But, you know, and it's not the kind of song that, you know, somebody would say, hey, you know, crank the stereo and put that kind of song, knowing the lyrics of the song. But yeah, that's totally Casper personality. He didn't really care. He would share with everybody his music or his clothing, fashion, and everything. And then, but boys had a good laugh about it. And, you know, that was Casper. That's the guy that we had. And, you know, everybody understand the type of guy that he is. And then he likes to make people laugh at the same time. And, but don't forget that it's the guy that gets on the ice and competes for the team. So, that's what we let him do. Let him be Darius up the ice.
Well, 30 years ago is the anniversary now. It's the 30th anniversary of the 1993 run right now. So, you know, I'm sure Greg and I would love to get into it a little bit deeper with you here. And, you know, I think in the past you've said that, you know, even going into that Washington series, because everybody knows, you know, the big moments that we're talking, the Volek winner against Pittsburgh, we're talking about the unfortunate hit against Turge. But, you know, going into that series, I think you had said you guys had kind of felt maybe a little disrespected by Washington. And can you just kind of maybe take us through the beginning of that series? Because I think those games were pretty close too. A lot of overtime games. You guys were pretty close in the standings. So what was the mindset going into that playoff series?
Well, I think that year, I think we won in Tampa 2-0 to kind of secure a spot in the playoff, knowing that we're going to play Washington. But before the playoff starts, there's articles in the paper. And then, you know, everybody gets the paper in the morning, you know, having breakfast, read articles. And I know we talked about it that, you know, some of the Washington guys were saying like, oh, the Islanders are just going to be a stepping stone for us. So I think it triggers something in our team that we wanted to win that series so bad. And then we came out hard. You know, I think we played them. We matched them pretty good. I think we had the four lines going. Everybody had one thing on our mind, is to win that first round from what people were saying, that we were just a stepping stone. So unfortunately, and then the last game they had when Tur scored that goal, the dirty hit from Dale Hunter, I think it was, didn't have a place in hockey back then, but he did it. And then we end up losing Tur for mostly the next series against Pittsburgh. Even if we had it for game seven, you know, we used Pierre kind of on the power play a little bit, but we were thinking if we go to the next series past Pittsburgh, we have Montreal. So we didn't want to take a chance of maybe Pierre get hurt again if we pass that series, go to Montreal without him. But I think it just took a little hard on our team to lose our best player. And But, you know, we stick together. We passed the David Volek goal was like, I always remember when he scored it, I just turned around and Al Arbor had his arm in the air. Like, and I was like, we just did it. Like, we just beat, you know, Pittsburgh and going on to Montreal. So Montreal, we had the close game too. We won some in overtime. We hit crossbar. We hit post. Things didn't get rolling for us the way we wanted. But, you know, it's a great thing that a lot of fans remember 93. And then, you know, I talked to a lot of people about it too. So,
you know, one guy looking back at some of those games from that Washington series, especially Ray Ferraro, I think he had 8 goals in that series. And one of the more amazing stats is that he scored 4 goals in a game, all 4 games. That was actually, you know, a loss. So Ray Ferraro, everyone I think probably knows him better even as a TV analyst now, but how important was he to that team, you know, especially in that Washington series, you know, scoring 8 goals?
Well, Ray was a guy that, you know, he was a competitor. I think Ray was very intense in the game. He played a game hard. He wanted to win. That's the type of player that he was. He would go out there and do whatever it takes for the team. And if the goals were coming on his end, it was a great thing. But he deserved all the goals that he scored. I think he worked for it. I play on the line with him a lot. And he was the kind of guy that was like the chemistry that we had with Patrick Flatley was always there. I remember Pat Flatley telling me one time, he goes, when I was getting the puck in the corner, sometimes I'd even look, I know where you guys were. Ray was the same way. Ray, if you get on the rush or whatever, Ray was right next to you. And if you wanted the puck, you can hear him. So he asked for it and helped out a lot. But yeah, Ray had great series. I think he was a great top player for our team. You know, we had the first line. I say the first line with Terje and Kinger and Thomas, but our line was doing all the work and then Ray was scoring all the goals. So we trying to do what we needed to do. So, and Ray ended up getting the goals, but it's, you know, Ray's the kind of guy that you hate to play against and you like to have on your team. And that's why he was so successful in the playoffs.
You did play in all 18 games in that playoff run. And in game 7 against Pittsburgh, you did score a goal. It wasn't the David Volek overtime winner, but at the time to go up 3-1, did you think it was a put away goal or did you say, okay, this is still the Pittsburgh Penguins and there is a lot of time left? Can you take us back to that third period?
Well, like you said, I don't think against that team in Pittsburgh that you get the third goal, you're going to be okay. We're going to relax a little bit and calm down. But, and you saw what happened. We were up like 3-1 still at the end. And I think in a minute they tied a game and we were all like, oh my God, we're in trouble. That was Pittsburgh, but I think everything counted on that game. Even my goal there, I took a long slap shot that deflected off the defenseman's stick and it kind of stumbled for Barrasso a little bit and went under his arm. But we just want to get the chances and choose from anywhere and crash the net, trying to get as much goals that we can, because we know Pittsburgh, it wasn't going to be over till it's over. And then, like I said, towards the end, when they tie up the game with like, not even a minute, we're like, oh my God. In game 7 in Pittsburgh, and the fans were going crazy. So we never counted them out, but until the Volek shot went in, and then I always remember that play, that pass across from Ray Ferraro, and he just one time, like a half slap shot, and it went in. Like I said, I turned around, and I'm like, oh, my God, this is it. We were in the locker room. We thought we won the cup that time, like beating Pittsburgh. But, you know, that's one of the great memories that I have. It's that game 7. And we had to go to Montreal. We were playing the afternoon the next day almost. And Al was saying, goes, come on, guys, let's go to get on the bus. We got to go. And we're like chill. We're still half dressed, still celebrating that win. So, but yeah, Pittsburgh, like it was a great, you know, it was a great series against them too. And then, you know, moving on, it was a great excitement for us.
Well, unfortunately, the run came to an end in 5 games against the Montreal Canadiens. But one thing I wanted to ask you about, there were a couple of years in the early 90s when you were with the Islanders that the NHL added a couple of games to the schedule, and they were neutral site games. Maybe a test to see what markets could potentially work as expansion. And you got to play a couple of games with the Islanders in Hamilton, Ontario, and Minneapolis, Minnesota. What were those neutral site games like? Did they feel almost a little bit more like preseason games because you didn't necessarily have the same type of home crowd that, of course, you would have with a non-neutral site game? What was it like?
I think they felt a little bit like that. I think they were going there. It was like almost like a preseason exhibition game. They were trying to experience thing, and we're going to the different building that we haven't been. But, you know, when the game started, when the puck is dropped, I think you're in the game and you're trying to make, you know, you kind of focus out the crowd and the surrounding, and then you just really focus on your game. So, but I think that's what the league was doing. And I think it was for the best of the league. And then everybody had to play those games. So But like I said, it was a little strange when you enter a building, but once the puck was dropped, I think it was game on.
How about in particular Minneapolis? Because they would have just lost the North Stars to Dallas. So was the vibe in that arena pretty strange considering they just had an NHL team and then all of a sudden it moved south?
It was. I think when they lost the team there and they were trying to get back a team, I'm like, you know, what happened here? You know, they lost a team out to Dallas and then now they want to bring a team back. It was almost like deja vu. Like you go back there, same town. Now it's not set up, but they have a plan on bringing a team there. So, but I think it just felt like, you know, it's like going back like in early, late 80s, playing in Minnesota, playing the North Stars. We're back in Minneapolis and we'll start all over again.
Well, you bring up Dallas and your career eventually took you down to Texas. So, you know, for a guy that, you know, we kind of alluded to earlier, spent so much time in the Northeast and Western New York, you know, what was that like for you on the ice, off the ice, going all the way down to a place like Dallas, especially, you know, relatively early on in the Stars' existence?
It was fairly new to me. Like the team just moved there. And I remember that trade. I was in Toronto and then it was the Super Bowl. And I end up like staying at home because I know we had to play Detroit the next day. And I said, you know, guys, we're doing a little something. So I can stay home. I got the call of the trade and then find out I was going to Dallas with Randy Wood. And I was like, okay, Dallas, some different. So going to Dallas was a little different. I think people were still learning about the game. Sometimes it was like, you know, like fans were cheering a little bit. And then, you know, like whether they're cheering for, people were trying to get used to it. But it was great. Like I went from Toronto where it was like in January, probably like very cold, to the day I got up in Dallas, which we had snow. And the day after it was like 80 degrees. So I was like, this is what it is. But it was new to hockey out west in Dallas. It wasn't really hockey hasn't been really the sport there. The Cowboys were pretty the main sport. But, you know, as it went along, I was there for a couple of years. And then the new ownership rebuilt the team, got some players and built up to it. I was fortunate to go there three times after, you know, again, you know, signing with Tampa, I ended up getting traded back there the year of the Cup in 99. And then I always enjoyed Dallas. I think Dallas was a great place. I still have many friends there. And it's something that's in, you know, that's something that I always remember. Like, you know, Dallas for me was a special place too.
Being a part of that 99 Cup team, I'm sure you've gotten this question before, but we do have to ask because of the controversial goal. And you know what? It's in Buffalo against the team you started your career with. How quickly did you on the Stars realize that that was going to be a controversial goal?
Actually, we didn't realize that really. I think that rule came on that year that if your foot is in the crease, there would be no goal. And if you look back at the season, a lot of time when different regular games, you're again pushed into the crease. And if the puck was going, they would say no goal. And I know Brett all mentioned at one point, he goes, the problem is if it happens in the playoff on a decisive game or a game seven, that could cause something. But like I said, I look back at the video. I know Brett kind of pushed the puck out. If you look at it, this is my view of it. Like the rules, yes. Bashik stops the puck. His foot is in the crease. He pulls the puck out. As he pulled his puck out, his skate comes out of the crease and he puts it back in. But when that happened, we didn't notice. It was chaos. Like everybody jumped on the ice. And I remember right before that goal, I broke my skate blade. And I only had one skate on. People don't know that. But I came off that ship because me and Brett were playing with bust up knees. I needed to get surgery. I had an ACL that was out. Brett had a torn ligament. So me and him were alternating that game going on McDonald's line. So, and I know on that shift, I was on the ice and I came up because my stick broke and Brett went on and Brett ended up scoring a goal. And when it went crazy, I saw the trainer running back to me with my skate that was not even fixed. So I just put it on. I kind of taped it across quick and jumped on the ice. But to go back to that goal, it was such craziness that, you know, the gloves were out, the whole thing happening. And after we find out like, oh, this, that. And I said, you know what? We're going to let the league decide and make the decision on that. It is what it is, you know. Do they want us to go back and play another day? But the league made the decision that he was in control of the puck and it was a good goal, which, you know, for me, yeah. And started my career in Buffalo and winning it in Buffalo. And then the Buffalo fans and the organization were mad at that goal. But you can't just look at me. It's like the league made the decision and that's what it is. So to me, like I said, when I look at the video, to me, it was a good goal. Brett kind of digged the puck out, escaped back out of the crease. Before you put it back in, he had control. That's what the league said. And I'm good with it.
You know, looking earlier in that run, you guys had a triple overtime game. I believe you had an assist on a Joe Nieuwendyk series-clinching triple overtime goal to eliminate Edmonton. It almost seems like you had two Volek moments in your career, you know, the obvious, the David Volek moment with the Islanders and then a Joe Nieuwendyk moment like that. So, you know, in your mind, like, are those similar kind of moments? Do you look at them that way, or just is that, does it all get overshadowed by the fact that you guys eventually won the cup in 99?
Well, I think that year, like, I don't know, like every time I was like putting out there, especially in overtime, I think I remember that game that you're talking about. I don't think I was getting that much ice time, and I went out there, and then eventually he put me out there, and then and in overtime, it's trying to make the right play, not to make the mistake, and hopefully get the puck on net. And on that play, that's really what happened, getting the goal back to Zuby, and Zuby deflection from Nui. You know, these are the moments that you don't forget, overtime goals. I don't know if it was the as big as the David Volek moment. I don't think it is. I think David's moment on that goal was a lot bigger than the one that we scored with Joe Nieuwendyk. But, you know, that was a start for us, that first series against Edmonton. They were young. They wanted, you know, we were an older team. And we always, like, trying to figure out, like, how we're going to play them, because I know they want, you know, they're going to play us hard. And they were a tough battle against Edmonton. I think it was one of the best series I've played. And that particular series, I was happy it was over.
And, you know, starting with your time in Dallas, you brought up the fact that you also played in Tampa Bay. I was looking through some of the photos before we hopped on for the podcast. And between those Dallas Stars jerseys in the 90s, those Tampa Bay Lightning alternates in the late 90s, the Kachina jersey in Arizona, the Washington Capitals jersey. I mean, you got to wear some great jerseys in your time. These are all pretty much feel like they've been on the reverse retro slate the last couple of years. So when you look back at some of those late 90s jerseys, do you have a favorite? Do you keep all those jerseys? How do you feel about some of those?
Well, I get pretty much all my jerseys. Yeah, like you said, I end up playing on 8 different teams, so I got a great collection of jerseys. But yeah, Phoenix was one of them that almost had like a little like race collar around the neck, and it was like really like almost like a kind of a heavy sweater, like back in the old days, to keep you warm. But as far as favorite jersey, listen, when you put a jersey on, it's your team, it's your color. I think I love every jersey that I wear in the NHL, and I was very fortunate of that. But I don't think there's a jersey that I'm like, I didn't like it. I think as far as favorite, obviously, you know, winning the cup with Dallas, would that be my favorite jersey that it's all signed by all the players now today? Maybe it is. It's a little something special. But as far as, you know, I played junior. I wear the Edmonton Islanders colors in junior, and it was always all color that I wear and that I like in junior. And then I was fortunate to have it, you know, with the Islanders here too. So maybe that's one of the colors that I liked.
So you also got the chance to represent Team Canada in the Spengler Cup in 2000. And for those who aren't familiar, it's a tournament held every winter in Switzerland. HC Davos is the host team, and typically you have a Team Canada, which is really, I guess you'd say, the best Canadian players, either not currently on a contract, or maybe they're playing for a European team and get let out of their contract for a week or two to participate in the tournament. And then there are also 3 club teams, typically from Europe. Once in a while an AHL team gets invited, but it's more of, I guess, just a celebration of hockey in Switzerland during the holiday season. Can you share what that was like playing in such a fabled tournament like that?
Well, to me, I was really coming back from a knee surgery. I had my knee repair in 99. I wasn't really ready to get back in the game probably till January. And Spengler Cup came with Team Canada. Wayne Fleming was one of the coach there, and they approached me to see if I was interested. And I wanted to play. I wanted to get back in the game. I think it was also a great test for my knee, but it was a great experience. Going to Davos, like you said, there was guys that played or were out of contract playing there. There was teams from that are Canadian that play already in overseas for a team, but they represent Team Canada at the Spengler Cup. To me, it was a great experience. I think it was a lot of fun. Like I said, it was during the holidays. I made great connection, great friends. I think I remember Mike Pekka was one of the guys that was there also too. You know, it's something that for me, you know, Team Canada back in the big days for Team Canada, you know, we had so many, like we talked about, like the Lemieux, the Gretzky, a lot of great Canadian players. So for me, representing Canada, the Springer Cup, that's what I had to deal with. But it was a great experience, and I really enjoyed it. It was a memory. It was fun.
Yeah, at that time, Pekka was a future New York Islanders captain because he was still a member of the Buffalo Sabres, but had some contract issues that year.
Yep.
But this would have been just after he was with the Sabres, losing the Stanley Cup final to you in 99. Was a little awkward there. Did you guys have to go a little bit back and forth about that?
I don't even think we talked about it, honestly. I think we got there and then we met for the first time and we were on the team, but there was so much going on with the team there in the term that we didn't really kind of sit down in the locker room and say, hey, what about that game? Or you know, I don't remember. Maybe he mentioned something, but I don't really remember it, that we really got on the subject about, you know, not being a goal or being a goal. So, you know, we were there for the same thing, trying to get back into the game. I know he was in contract dispute and he decided to play. And for me, I'm like, oh, great. Mike Pekka's going. I'm going. It's going to be interesting, but it went pretty smooth.
So after your playing career ended, you know, I guess we should fast forward to now where, you know, you've been living on Long Island for a long time. I don't know quite how long, but also you've been very involved with youth hockey on Long Island. You think about the Junior Islanders, the team that always goes to the Quebec Pee Wee Hockey Tournament, the Long Island Royals. I'm seeing the Long Island Stars, Dixie Hills Chiefs. You know, first, what made you want to get involved in youth hockey? And, you know, why did you settle on Long Island to live after your career?
Well, I always liked Long Island, came back here. And, you know, my fiance is from Long Island, too. So I started in hockey, I think, with the Junior Islanders. I think they asked me if I was, you know, Bobby Nystrom and Jerry Hart started the program. And they kind of brought me in to take over, go to Quebec, which I had a great time. At one point, they decided to do something different. And that's when the Long Island Stars started. I was like skating with a lot of kids that were trying out for the Islanders. And when I was in there, a lot of people wanted me to do my own team and they were going to stick with me. And I was going to do for that 1 year and it just snowballed from there. So the Dixiel Chief is an organization that I want to give more chance to kids on Long Island to maybe experience Quebec. I decided to put a second team in the lower division there, which we did for a couple of years. You know, just expose Quebec to all the kids from Long Island and live the experience. So, but I, like I said, I got involved with people asking me and I decided to do it and I enjoy it. And that's why I'm still doing it today.
Now, the last few years, COVID aside, of course, but prior to that happening, and thankfully it came back this past year, you've been a big part of the alumni weekend that the Islanders have held. How important is it to come back and connect with your old teammates, maybe some of the Islanders from other eras, and even getting to know some of the guys from today's squad?
I think it's great. I think it's very important. I really believe in that for an NHL team to have your alumni around. You know, I play a little bit in Toronto, a lot of alumni there. Buffalo's got a great alumni program. Like I said, when I came with the Islanders, I remember playing my first couple games with the Islanders, you know, Clark Gillies, Bobby Nystrom, and all these guys were walking, saying hello. You know, I played junior. These guys were like on top of the world in the NHL. So I think it's a great thing. The alumni weekend with the new ownership, with Lou there as a GM, I think it's a great thing. And it's become so big. We had almost over like 50 alumni guys for the weekend there. We mingled with all kinds of guys, way back to Andre Saint Laurent that lives in Canada, to the guys that played after me. You know, after I left the Islanders, they became alumni. But I think it's a great event. I think it's great for organization, and it's keeping the dynasty of the Islanders alive for sure.
And this is a big year for the franchise because it is the 50th anniversary season. When you see 50 years of New York Islanders hockey, and you were a big part of one of the better seasons, maybe the best non-dynasty spring that the Islanders have had. You can obviously compare it to a couple other years in 75 and both 2020, 2021. But knowing how important that 93 team is in Islanders lore and seeing it part of some of the best of the 50 years that this franchise has had, what does it mean to you?
I think it's a great honor just to be part of that organization. I think, like I said, 50 years. I was at the outing yesterday and we had the 50 logo puck on the table. Like you said, I wasn't part of the dynasty, but some people that came fans of the Islanders after the dynasty remembers the 1993, the run that we had. And like I said, I talked to a lot of people that I run into, and they're like, "Were you part of the 93? I'm like, yeah, because they're a little bit younger than me. But these people remember that. They were young kids, and then that's what they remember. So you go back, and it's 50 years of the Islanders and, you know, talking about the dynasty and the 93 that was part of it. It's a good little feeling that, you know, we're part of a moment that people remember still today. So it's a great honor. I live here. I'm on the island. I've been here. I came here in 91. I came back. I've been here for 22 years, and it's good to be around these guys and be part of the organization.
Benoit, thank you so much for joining us here on Talking Isles.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. Great time.
Well, thank you again for joining us on another edition of Talkin' Isles. Please make sure to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you might listen. You can follow us on Twitter. I am at Greg Picker here.
And I am at Rightsway.
You can follow all the latest info about the team on Twitter at NY Islanders and stay up to date on UBS Arena at ubsarena.com. A big thank you to our producer, Rachel Lusher, and to WRAQ at Hofstra University. And we'll see you next time on Talkin' Isles.